I was trying to get a better grip with a view to looking down his throat when my hand slipped behind his foreleg, and my heart gave a sudden thump as I encountered the axillary gland. It, too, was grossly enlarged. I whipped my fingers back into his groin, and there was the inguinal gland, prominent as an egg. The prescapula was the same, and as I groped feverishly, I realized that every superficial lymph gland was several times its normal size. Hodgkin's disease. For a few moments, I was oblivious of the shouting and laughter, the muffled blare of music. Then I looked at Paul, who was regarding me calmly as he puffed his pipe. How could I tell him in these surroundings? He would ask me what Hodgkin's disease was, and I would have to explain that it was a cancer of the lymphatic system, and that his dog was surely going to die. As my thoughts raced, I stroked the shaggy head, and Theo's comic whiskered face turned towards me. People jostled past. Hands reached out and bore gins and whiskies and beers past my face. A fat man threw his arm round my neck. I leant across. "Paul," I said.
"Yes, Jim."
Will you bring Theo round to the surgery tomorrow morning? It's 10 o'clock on a Sunday." Mentally, the eyebrow twitched upwards. Then he nodded.
"Right, old boy."
I didn't bother to finish my drink. I began to push my way towards the door, and as the crush closed around me, I glanced back. The little dog's tail was just disappearing under the stool. Next day, I had one of those early waking mornings when I started tossing around at 6 o'clock and finished by staring at the ceiling. Even after I had got my feet on the ground and brought Helen a cup of tea, the waiting was interminable until the moment arrived which I had been dreading, when I faced Paul across the surgery table with Theo standing between us. I told him straight away. I couldn't think of an easy way to lead up to it. His expression did not change, but he took his pipe out of his mouth and looked steadily at me, then at the dog and back again at me. "Oh," he said at last. "I see." I didn't say anything, and he slowly ran his hand along the little animal's back. "Are you quite sure, Jim?"
"Absolutely."
"I'm terribly sorry."
"Is there no treatment?"
"There are various palliatives, Paul, but I've never seen any of them do any good. The end result is always the same."
"Yes."
He nodded slowly. "But he doesn't look so bad. What will happen if we don't do anything?" I paused. "Well, as the internal glands enlarge, various things will happen. Ascites, dropsy, will develop in the abdomen. In fact, you see, he's a little pot-bellied now."
"Yes,
I do see now you mention it. Anything else?" "As the thoracic glands get bigger, he'll begin to pant."
"I've noticed that already.
He's breathless after a short walk. And all the time he'll get thinner and thinner and more debilitated." Paul looked down at his feet for a few moments, then faced me.
"So what it amounts to is that he's going to be pretty miserable for the rest of his life."
He swallowed.
"And how long is that going to be?"
"A few weeks. It varies, maybe up to 3 months."
"Well, Jim," he smoothed back his hair, "I can't let that happen. It's my responsibility. You must put him to sleep now before he really starts to suffer. Don't you agree?"
"Yes, Paul, it's the kindest thing to do."
"Will you do it immediately? As soon as I'm out of that door?"
"I will," I replied. "And I promise you he won't know a thing." His face held a curious fixity of expression. He put his pipe in his mouth, but it had gone out, so he stuffed it into his pocket. Then he leant forward and patted his dog once on the head. The bushy face with the funny shock of hair round the muzzle turned to him, and for a few seconds they looked at each other. Then, "Goodbye, old chap," he muttered, and strode quickly from the room. I kept my promise.
"Good lad. Good old Theo," I murmured, and stroked the face and ears again and again as the little creature slipped peacefully away.